Now the New York City skyline looms over a river. Titles appear. Paramount Pictures presents a Scott Rudin production, a Roger Mitchell film. As our view whizzes through city traffic, more titles appear. Samuel L. Jackson as Doyle Gibson. Ben Affleck as Gavin Bannock. Changing Lanes. Toni Collette, Sidney Pollack, William Hurt, Amanda Peet, Richard Jenkins, Dylan Baker, Kim Staunton, John Benjamin Hickey, Michael Patrick McGrath, Bruce Altman, Jennifer Dundas Lowe, Joe Grafasi. Casting by Ellen Lewis, Marcia DeBonis. Music by David Arnold. Co-producer Scott Aversano. Costume designer Ann Roth. Edited by Christopher Tellefson, ACE. Production designer Christy Zia. Director of photography Salvatore Totino. Executive producers Ron Bozeman, Adam Schroeder. Story by Chap Taylor. Screenplay by Chap Taylor and Michael Tolkien. Produced by Scott Rudin. Directed by Roger Mitchell. This program has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from CBS. Described by Dutch Priest, Stacey Perlman, Justin Soule, and Matthew Warren Lane. Read by Miles Neff. Now on a freeway overlooking the World Trade Center, a school bus carries grade school children, each holding a musical instrument. One boy plays a trumpet as another blows into a clarinet. The bus rolls through a rundown neighborhood past a two-story brick building under the freeway. Inside, a bespectacled African-American man lets go of a dirty plastic sheet covering a window. Turning, he faces a woman holding a file.
I think I'll make this the boys' room.
The master bedroom?
Well, boys need, you know, space.
How old are they?
Steven's 10, Danny's 7.
Lucky kids.
Lucky dad.
Now in a spacious hall, a white-haired conductor waves his baton as the school children perform. Audience of well-dressed adults sits in folding chairs around the musicians. Pedestals placed around the room hold large vases of white tulips. As the violinists lower their instruments, a square-jawed young man applauds from his seat behind them. Now in a bank, the bespectacled homebuyer rocks anxiously in his chair, one hand in a loose fist over his mouth. Across the desk, a balding man carefully peruses a file.
Is everything, it's my first house and...
Phil, you're getting the loan.
I'm not sure I filled everything out correctly.
You're approved.
The loan officer shuts the file.
We'll have it done for you tomorrow. Come by, say, 12:30, and we can sign off on this.
In the hall, the square-jawed man holds a microphone up to a young violinist.
What about you?
He bought all these instruments.
Right. Did you know that he built this hall and gallery? A shelter and a hospital in Mexico and a lot of other really great things. I met Simon Dunn when I was in college. I was tutoring kids in the local school, kids who didn't have a lot of resources. And one of the people I was working with said that her grandfather liked to help children in need. Her name was Mina Dunn. In fact, she's sitting right over here.
He points to a mousy young woman.
So my friend and I went to her grandfather. And we said, we have some kids who need a playground. And we needed $1,000. And he said, well, I'll tell you what. You can't have $1,000 to build one playground. You can have $10,000 to build 10. So we did.
Now Doyle sits in a crowded meeting.
6 years.
How about you?
I feel like champagne. I understand the idea of celebration. I see the bubbles in champagne as something good and beautiful. Not part of my soul evaporating, but rising with joy.
A man with sandy blonde hair listens from the back of the room.
I don't want champagne. I am champagne.
The blonde man smiles.
It's great to be alive. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing.
Others raise their hands.
Mike.
Hi, I'm Mike, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mike.
I've been sober for 15 days.
Now the square-jawed man chases Mina down some steps.
Mina, wait a second.
My grandfather liked you for some mysterious reasons of his own.
That's the only reason we allowed you to speak today.
Wait a minute. Mina, we're friends.
We were friends a long time ago.
Mina, I owe you so much.
Mina stares at him.
What happened to you?
What do you mean?
Mina turns to a waiting limo.
See you in court.
Mina, wait a second.
It's okay. It's okay. Let
Mina.
Go.
A gray-haired man pats him on the back, then faces a couple leaving the concert, now at the AA meeting.
And the wisdom to know so keep coming back. It works if you work it, so work it, you'll work it.
Now the square-jawed man enters a stylish office space and smiles at the receptionist.
Good morning, Julia.
Hey, Gavin.
He enters an office where a blonde woman sits with her bare feet on her desk.
Then lessor and lessee shall...
I don't deserve this. I did absolutely nothing wrong, and now she just decides that she's going to hate me.
Just a second, Tom.
No, nothing. Do your thing. I just want to tell you the news. You know, I did absolutely nothing wrong.
At the AA meeting, the blonde man faces Doyle.
What is it with all this champagne stuff?
Oh, that was, that's just
a metaphor.
Yeah, but I'm not drinking, and that's what's important, right?
Be careful with your metaphors, Doyle.
At the office, Gavin drink. Faces two men.
He's only mad at you because she can't be mad at him.
He was your client. She's not your client. Simon Dunn was your client.
She's still just incredibly angry about this.
Those are her feelings, not yours.
I know that, Stephen.
You got the documents. They're all signed. Get in and get out, Gavin.
We didn't do anything wrong, though.
Of course we didn't. File the papers and get out. Okay?
Now, among rows of workers at computers, Doyle wears a phone headset.
What you want is term insurance, but you're not sure about the cost. What's important is that you be realistic about what you need. All right, now, this particular policy is never going to cost you more than $15 a month.
He smiles.
That's right.
Now in a toy store, Doyle walks down an aisle. He eyes a baseball glove wrapped in a plastic bag and takes it off the shelf. Later, Doyle walks down the street carrying a shopping bag and notepad. Getting in an old four-door Toyota, he lays the notepad on the passenger seat. In a silver Mercedes, Gavin uses a cell phone.
Ellen, call the courthouse and tell them I'm going to be late. You know what? Just call Kaufman's office and tell them that I called.
In Doyle's car.
Okay?
Your Honor, I'm representing myself today because I want you to hear the sincerity of my words. Boys need their father.
He writes
Boys
on the notepad.
Need their father.
A freeway exit sign reads Brooklyn Bridge, Manhattan Civic Center. Gavin peers up at it. Flipping on his right turn signal, he searches for an opening in traffic. He starts to move into the right lane. As Gavin veers left to avoid hitting a car, he sideswipes Doyle's Toyota. Doyle slams on the brake and rams into water barrels on the exit median. Gavin stops a few feet away. Both men toss up their hands, then get out of their cars.
You all right?
Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah. You got any serious car?
Yeah, sure.
Gavin gets back into his Mercedes and leans toward the glove compartment. Doyle carries his notepad around his car, spots a flat tire, and shakes his head.
Hello?
We just got a call from the court. They're looking for you.
I had an accident.
Oh, no. Are you okay?
I'm fine.
Are you sure?
I'm fine. It's nothing.
Nothing.
Who's that?
It's no one.
That's maybe nothing
do you
to
you. Mr. Delano,
no, don't do that. Don't do that.
I'll do what I have to.
I'm sorry. Not you.
I have to do this right. You know what I mean?
Yes, I think so.
I do.
Yes,
Queen.
Hold on a second.
In all my actions.
Just yeah. Hold on for 1 second, okay?
What do you want me to do?
Call the court and tell them that I'm on my way, all right?
Okay.
Tell them I'm on the steps. Okay, thank you.
It's only going to take 5 minutes.
All right, but I got to be somewhere like 5 minutes.
You know, you really should keep your card and your glove compartment, not your briefcase.
That's not what I'm looking for.
As Gavin rummages through his briefcase, he pulls files out and sets them on his trunk. They slide off and Doyle picks them up.
Thank you. Very nice, sir. Okay. I'll tell you what. I'm going to write you a blank check. And you just can't get your car fixed by lunch?
No, I don't want to check, man.
Don't worry about it.
I want to do this right.
Come on.
Oh, look, I got to be someplace else, too. But it's important to me that we do this right. It should be important to you, too.
That's it. Sorry, I got to go.
He closes his checkbook.
Sorry, what? I got to go, man. I'm late. I have to go somewhere, too, man.
Okay, I get a lift?
I'm sorry.
Where are you going, man? Come on, man. Don't leave me out here like this, man.
Better luck next time.
Gavin drives off. Standing on the edge of the exit ramp, Doyle stares helplessly after the silver Mercedes. As he turns back toward his car, he notices something on the ground. Bending down, he picks up an orange file folder. As he glances from it to the departing Mercedes, fat raindrops hit the roof of his car. Now in the city, Gavin runs across a street in the downpour and enters a building. Meanwhile, jogging along the exit ramp, Doyle carries the shopping bag, the file, and his notepad as he tries to thumb a ride. Now Gavin enters a courtroom where Mina sits with a lawyer. Gavin takes a seat at the defense table.
Your Honor, sorry. I'm late. I was in a traffic accident.
Are you all right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Was anyone hurt?
No, Your Honor.
Then will Mr. Kaufman begin?
At the plaintiff's table, Mina's lawyer stands.
Your Honor, since its inception, the Simon Dunn Foundation was managed by Mr. Dunn and a board of trustees, which included his granddaughter, my client, Mina Dunn. Upon his death, that board was disbanded.
He shrugs toward Gavin.
We want to know why.
As Kaufman sits, Gavin stands.
Well, it was on instructions from my client, Your Honor.
Why would he do that? These people were his friends.
They were his friends. They were wonderful people who loved kids and music. But they just weren't qualified to manage a $100 million foundation. That's why he signed a power of appointment to his lawyers.
Address the court, Counselor.
Simon Dunn signed a power of appointment appointing Walter Arnell and Stephen Delano sole trustees of the foundation.
He was old and he was taken advantage of. You took advantage of him, Gavin.
Now you're charging a crime, Miss Dunn, and this is probate court, not criminal court. Mr. Kaufman, does your client understand?
She does, Your Honor.
Your Honor, I'm not here to debate everyone's opinion about Simon Dunn's intention. I'm here to present some papers to the court, which are signed by Mr. Dunn. They've all been notarized. And furthermore, they direct the foundation to be administered in precisely the way in which Mr. Dunn, not his granddaughter, intended. Please, the court.
What do you got?
Trust agreement.
Gavin puts a brown folder on the table.
Tax exemption.
He lays down a blue folder.
Power of appointment.
Gavin reaches into his briefcase and nervously rifles through its side compartments. Mina and Kaufman eye him impatiently.
Mr. Bannock?
He continues to search.
Mr. Bannock?
Gavin takes out a wad of papers, shoves them back in, and tightens his lips thoughtfully.
What mistake?
This morning, after the accident, on the side of the road, we were exchanging insurance information, and I used the file folder to
No, I don't know.
To write my name on, an address, and I gave it to him. I just wasn't thinking clearly. I guess it's just been the accident.
Did you get his name?
Did I get his name? Yes, of course I got his name.
Let's call him.
Gavin fidgets with his wedding band.
If memory serves, Your Honor, I believe he's not in.
How do you know?
He made some reference to the fact that he was feeling hurried because he had to be at an appointment of some sort.
Call his number and leave a message.
Yes, of course, Your Honor.
Meanwhile, Doyle enters the courthouse back in the courtroom.
Your Honor.
Yes, Mr. Kaufman.
May I make a suggestion?
Yes.
Kaufman stands.
I'm in no hurry, and I know how bad a person feels after a car crash, right?
Yeah, thanks, Terry.
No. Don't mention it. So, Gavin, when the man whose name you don't know gets out of the meeting that you say he's in, would you call him at the number that you think is in your car? So that we can have the document that you assure us gives us the proof that the senior partners at your law firm really do control the money Simon Dunn left to the children of New York State.
Doesn't matter anyway. I'll have a copy and I'll bring the copy in.
A piece of paper with an original signature on it still has great magical power. Without that piece of paper with the signature, Miss Dunn can sue that law firm for fraud and possibly even send you and the other members of your law firm to jail. Mr. Bannock. Find your man and bring me back that file by the end of the day.
Gavin gazes blankly.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Next case.
At a security checkpoint, a guard runs a handheld metal detector over Doyle. As he tries to continue on, the guards hold him back.
Thank you, sir.
Doyle quickly gathers his belongings from a plastic bin. As an X-ray machine scans his shopping bag, the baseball glove appears on its screen. Now Doyle rushes through a bustling lobby. Behind him, an elevator door closes on Gavin. Doyle rushes into a waiting room and faces two boys.
Hello,
Hey, guys.
We're really late. Mom went in already. What's in her bag? Daddy.
Oh, this bag. It's a present for the judge.
I want a present. I want a present. You shouldn't lie to him, Dad.
Doyle squats down to face his sons.
I'll never give a judge such a cool present. Happy birthday yesterday. Listen to me, Dad. Everything's going to be better. I bought a house.
In Oregon?
No, in Queens.
Mommy says moving to Oregon.
Oh, now you don't have to. That's why I bought the house, so you don't have to move to Oregon.
Oh, you don't want to live there with us.
Doyle purses his lips and nods.
See what the judge says, okay?
He enters the courtroom.
Motion for joint custody and award sole custody of the children.
No, wait, please.
Your Honor, Miss Gibson is moving to Oregon to start a new job. Weekly visitations with Mr. Gibson are going to be impossible.
No, wait.
So noted, filed with the court clerk.
Hold it, Your Honor. Your Honor, I know I'm late, but someone hit my car. Now, see, look here. This is evidence, new evidence. I have a new plan for joint custody. It's all right here.
Well, Mr. Gibson, you are late, and the hearing has been conducted.
Yeah, but I had an accident.
Your Honor, we're free to go.
No, I'm not done yet.
The court ruled, Mr. Gibson.
But I wasn't here.
The court ruled.
No, Valerie, I bought you a house.
It's too late, Your Honor.
No, it's not too late. It's 20 minutes. It's just 20 minutes. 20 minutes can't be too late. Valerie, please, don't let 20 minutes stand in the way of what I'm trying to do.
Please don't start and talk to him.
No!
Mr. Gibson, would you please approach the bench?
Your Honor, can we leave now?
No.
Yes.
No!
Mr. Gibson.
Valerie, can we talk?
Mr. Gibson.
Valerie leaves.
Mr. Gibson, come here for a moment, please.
Doyle faces the judge.
Emotions run high in here. Now, if this weren't a divorce court, the way you just yelled in my courtroom.
I'm sorry.
Of course you are. You have children, Mr. Gibson. Keep them in front of you.
I just wanted to tell my wife I got her a house for the children.
When?
Well, I have it all right here. That's my plan. I found a house for Valerie and for the boys, and they don't have to move. This is what I wanted to say.
Doyle reads his notepad.
Need their fathers. The streets of this world are lonely for boys without their fathers. If I have made mistakes, and I have grown, and I have recognized those mistakes.
What kind of a house?
Doyle stares at the judge.
It's not a big house, and it's not in great shape, but I can fix it. I can make it work. And there's a space for, well, if she'll have me back. There's a place for me, too. But I'm not asking for that right now. I'm just asking that she not take the boys and move halfway across the world.
Well, when they're settled, you can arrange visitations with your children. Oregon is not the other side of the world.
It is to me. I want my family. I want my boys. I had an accident. This guy hit me on the FDR. He cut me off. You know, I wanted to be here.
You know, if this was my marriage and it was this important to me, I would have been here on time. Everyone was here on time except you. Next case.
The judge lifts a hand in a little wave.
718.
As Doyle leaves, a matronly woman approaches the bench.
How's everybody today? Good morning. Nice to see you again.
Doyle steps out into the crowded waiting room past a guard looking over a clipboard. Putting on his floppy bucket hat, he walks slowly toward the lobby door, Gavin's orange file folder still under his arm. At the curb outside, Gavin sits behind the wheel of his car, rain blurring the windows. Exiting the courthouse, Doyle walks past people opening and closing umbrellas under the building's stark colonnade. By one stone column, Doyle stops and looks at the notepad in his hand. Under it, he holds the orange file. He throws them both into a trash can. Taking a few aimless steps, Doyle looks up at the falling rain. With a hand to his mouth, he turns and gazes back at the courthouse. In the Mercedes, Gavin stares blankly behind his rain-streaked window. At the law firm, the blonde woman answers her phone.
Hello?
If you and I had gotten caught before we stopped, my wife found out, and I left the law and died in a horrible accident at sea, I would be better off than I am right now.
What happened?
Driving, Gavin holds his cell phone.
Wouldn't take a check. He said he wanted to be clean in all his actions.
The judge wouldn't take a check?
The guy.
What guy?
What day is today?
Friday. Actually, it's Good Friday.
Good Friday. What's good about it?
Gavin, what's going on?
I know what's good about it. My file's walking down the street.
Gavin.
Hey! Hey!
Grinning, Gavin lowers his window and rolls slowly down the street beside Doyle.
Hey, excuse me. Hey, listen, man, you don't know me. I know. You don't have to believe me, but that was not like me today. I'm so grateful, you know, just to God and right here in front of the Lord's house. Yeah, come on, hop in, get in the car, get out of the rain.
Doyle keeps walking.
My name's Gavin Bannock.
Doyle reluctantly looks toward the lawyer.
Doyle Gibson.
Hey, listen, Doyle, that's not what I'm like this morning. I really isn't. That's not who I am. I mean it. I'm a lawyer. I should have never left the scene of an accident. I should know better.
As Doyle continues to walk, Gavin follows alongside him in the car.
My file. Did you find it? Yeah, I had an orange file. It was in my briefcase. I thought maybe it fell out and picked it up. Do you have it? Did you get it?
You said better luck next time.
I said give me a lift. You said better luck next time and just...
Doyle grazes one palm past the other.
Better luck next time? I said that? Listen, sir, please. I have no excuse for my behavior, and I'm sorry. I don't know what I can do to make it up to you, except I will buy you a new car.
Doyle stops and glares at Gavin.
Money. You think I want money? What I want is my morning back. I need you to give my time back to me. Can you give me back my time? Can you give my time back to me? Huh? Can you?
Whoa, wait a minute. Whoa.
Doyle pulls Gavin out of his car.
So she won't move to Oregon. So she won't take the boys. So they'll move into the house so I can be a father. Just 20 minutes. Can you give me that? I wish I could, man. I wish I could.
Doyle eyes him fiercely.
I wish I could.
He lets go of Gavin and walks away.
Wait a minute. Wait, you have the file? Doyle, you got the file?
Gavin walks after him.
Wait a minute, Doyle. Wait a minute. Doyle, do you have the file? I'm sorry. What do you mean? I'm throwing it away!
Gavin's gaze wilts as he stands in the rain. He notices a traffic officer writing a ticket in front of his Mercedes. With his overcoat soaking wet, he squints against the downpour and walks toward it. Now, as Doyle's dark shoes tread across a sidewalk subway grate, Gavin returns to the marble and glass interior of the law firm. The soles of Doyle's shoes cross the grate above us. Then we follow behind Gavin's shoulder. As Doyle halts out on the street, Gavin slows his pace through the firm. Doyle shifts restlessly on his feet, then plods back the way he came. At the firm, Gavin meets Walter Arnell and Stephen Delano in a corner office suite.
Hey.
Yes.
How'd it go?
Delano folds his hands. Gavin's eyes shift between the two seated partners.
Well, I'm coughing and some tap dancing. But once I filed the papers, what was he going to do? Guy squeaked like a mouse.
I love it when they squeak.
Yeah, I mean, we have the power of appointment, so God's on our side.
Meanwhile, Doyle retrieves the orange file folder.
Hey, I'm going over to Southeast Harbor tomorrow looking at a boat. Hinkley 51.
Wow. 51-footer, huh? Tough life.
You
huh?
are not quite ready for a 51-footer yet.
All right.
But as soon as I take delivery on her, I want you and Cynthia to have China Bird.
Gavin eyes two framed photos of a 30-foot sailboat. Outside the courthouse, Doyle looks over the orange folder.
Steven, I don't know what to say.
Have to say anything, I'm saying it. I'm saying thank you to my partner and my son-in-law.
Delano smiles amiably at Gavin.
And my friend.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Gavin shoots a disbelieving look at Arnell.
Thank you. So I have a couple more interviews I got to bang out down the hall, so I'm going to go back down there and do some work.
Great.
Delano winks at Gavin.
Okay. All right. So long.
See you.
All right.
As Gavin leaves, turning away, his nonchalant smile evaporates. Outside, Doyle follows a busy sidewalk back in the firm.
Hey, doing Kate?
Hey, Gavin.
The young attorney crosses to his office. A younger man and woman stand facing him.
So, how'd it go?
In and out. Easy peasy. What are we
kind of people we have here.
This is Sarah Windsor.
Hello.
And Tyler Cohen.
Tyler, how you doing? Who's on first?
Miss Windsor.
Sarah Windsor, come on down. Have a seat, please. And who are you?
Sarah Windsor.
Not the name tag. I mean, who are you, and what have you been doing? Why do you want to be a lawyer? Why do you want to work here?
Well, I went to St. Paul's. I did my undergraduate work at Yale, and now I'm finishing at Yale Law. I clerked last summer for the California State Supreme Court. The reason I chose law is that my father was district attorney of San Francisco.
Really?
So I've always been interested in the law and politics, and I was an economics major. This firm is particularly strong in municipal finance law and public policy, which is the area I'm hoping to explore. Although, I gotta tell you, I do have an eye on public service. I know how much this firm supports pro bono work, and I'd love to help on a death penalty defense for the poor.
As the bright-eyed candidate watches him, Gavin nods absently, and his eyes glaze over.
Why didn't I just give him my insurance card?
I'm sorry?
I'm sorry, it's not your fault, it's my fault.
Excuse me, Gavin? This really weird fax just came in. I think you should look at it.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you know what it means?
Gavin springs to his feet. Out on a sidewalk, Doyle halts with the rolled folder in his grip. In the firm, Gavin knocks on the blonde-haired attorney's door.
Shell. I'm going to talk to you. Shell.
What the hell?
He rips out the phone cord.
It's from the file. He's got the file.
The fax shows a page of typeset text dominated by a handwritten note in huge letters. Better luck next time.
Help me.
Now Doyle enters a bar called Puffy's Tavern. Doyle steps up to the bartender.
Hi.
He lays the file folder on the counter.
Can I have the, bourbon, straight up.
Sure.
The bartender gets down the bottle, sets out a cocktail napkin, and plants a highball glass in front of Doyle. He fills the glass. Doyle drums his fingers.
Have a twist, please.
The bartender presses a half slice of lemon on the rim of the glass. The amber whiskey jiggles slightly. Doyle slowly reaches for it. Back in Michelle's office at the firm.
I'm not a partner here. You know, that actually doesn't bother me. Partners have to bring in business. I've just got to do my job. If I don't like it here, I can leave.
What's not to like?
Watching you become one of them?
Gavin locks his gaze on hers.
I always thought you were cutting a pretty big corner by convincing a dying old man to sign a power of appointment.
It wasn't like that.
Are you sure it wasn't like that?
Of course I'm sure.
Gavin paces toward a plate glass window and gazes skyward.
What?
Well, he was in pretty bad shape when I went to see him. I mean, it was... Maybe he didn't...
Maybe
he didn't understand exactly.
Didn't understand exactly?
He didn't know exactly what he was signing. But Walter and Steven said that Simon put too much faith in his friends, and the board was in his pocket, and it was better for the foundation if we could just help control and manage the money.
Donna said that?
Yes.
Doesn't that sound reasonable?
What's that supposed to mean?
That means that without this file, you'll be in more trouble than your father-in-law and his partner. You're the attorney of record. You could actually go to jail for this. You need that file.
What am I going to do?
Gavin's head leans heavily on his hand. Michelle's eyes drop to her desk.
There's this guy. He helps out with things that need helping out.
Like what?
Like things like getting people to do things you want them to do when they don't necessarily want to do them.
Michelle gets to her feet and paces uneasily, holding her head, then her stomach.
Michelle. I need help.
Did you really believe it served Simon Dunn to sign those papers when he was too late to read them?
I wouldn't have done it otherwise. Yes. Yes, I did.
Do you want what's right?
Of course I do.
And what's right is your job, your wife, your life?
Yes.
Gavin exits Michelle's office carrying a slip of paper. Putting on his overcoat, he strides past the law student, Tyler.
Don't go anywhere.
Hey, where are you going?
Going out.
At the tavern, the bourbon sits untouched.
I'm in a bar.
Doyle uses a payphone to talk to his sponsor.
What company?
No.
Champagne feeling gave you a hangover.
Are you drinking?
Doyle eyes the bourbon on the bar top next to the orange file folder.
No.
His sponsor takes the call inside a TV production studio.
What happened in court today?
I'm in a bar. What's that tell you?
It tells me that you're really angry. And that anger has gotten you into the one place in the world you shouldn't be.
Come on, leave that bar. Leave the bar.
Doyle's wedding band shines as he grips the receiver.
I'm sorry.
He shakes his head a little. Now in a stark white corridor, Gavin squints into a doorway but keeps on walking. His groggy eyes shift left and right as he plods forward. In the tavern, Doyle sits facing the bourbon glass. His folded arms rest on the bar top inches from it. Still wearing his overcoat and navy blue bucket hat, he peers off through his eyeglasses, then nudges the drink away. Doyle works his lips tensely and wrings his hands.
Have a Coke, please.
Meanwhile, Gavin opens a door and reaches a second one bearing a broad frosted window.
No, no choices. Come on in.
The man inside talks on the phone.
You tell Roberta that I said one cookie before lunch is okay. Get better. Mr. Barron.
Hey, Mr. Finch.
How are you?
How you doing?
Mr. Finch shakes Gavin's hand.
You look nervous.
Yeah, a little bit, I guess.
Don't be. Have a seat.
Finch smiles in his shirt and tie, now in the tavern.
Who's your god?
Now or Hall of Fame?
Oh, whatever.
Well, I'd say it's the guy who did a Volkswagen ad.
Oh.
You know, the one where the cop is giving a speeding ticket to a guy in a bug.
Now, Finch types.
Doyle Gibson. Shouldn't have told you he was in insurance. Makes it too easy. I tell my clients, never tell anyone anything about yourself.
A crayon drawing hangs above a photo of a little girl.
There's a state insurance license. And that gives me his Social Security number, which gives me... everything.
In the tavern, the two guys continue to chat.
The one with the little kids.
The little kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kids.
Yeah. Sitting around, you know, this little, I don't know what he is, like an Indian kid, that cute little black kid. Like, I'm Tiger Woods.
I'm Tiger Woods.
Back in Finch's office.
Well, you had a fender bender, and the other guy's going postal. That's not the way to do things.
I don't want to kill anybody. You know what I mean? I've just never done this kind of thing before.
What kind of thing is that?
I just want my file back, you know.
As Finch squeezes a stress ball, he grins.
You'll get your file back.
How? Exactly.
It's like the dog collar that gives a little electric shock when the dog barks. You don't kill the dog, you just want the dog to settle down.
Now we're torturing an animal?
We're all set. May I?
Finch's index finger hovers above the keyboard.
Is there any other way?
Well, sure. Call him up and just be nice to him.
Finch fixes a serene gaze on Gavin, who shifts uneasily.
All right, do it.
At the tavern.
You guys are in advertising, right?
Yeah, you too.
But, you know, I hope you don't mind, but I was intrigued by your conversation. I just thought you were in advertising. So I want to give you my dream version of a Tiger Woods commercial, okay?
Go ahead.
The ad man smiled eagerly.
There's this black guy on a golf course. And all these people are trying to get him to caddy for them, but he's not a caddy. He's just a guy trying to play a round of golf.
Finch types.
Then these guys give him a $5 bill and tell him to go to the clubhouse and get him cigarettes and beer. So off he goes. Home. To his wife and to their little son, who he teaches to play golf. We see all the other little boys playing hopscotch while little Tiger practices on the putting green. We see all the other kids eating ice cream while Tiger practices hitting long balls in the rain while his father shows him how. And we fade up to Tiger winning 4 Grand Slams in a row and becoming the greatest golfer to ever pick up a 9-iron.
Finch deletes Gibson's credit info.
And we end on his father in the crowd on the sidelines and Tiger giving him the trophies. All because of a father's determination that no fat white man, like your father's probably, would ever send his son to the clubhouse for cigarettes and beer.
One ad man looks to the other, then faces Doyle and shakes his head.
I'm sorry, what did you say about our fathers?
The bartender dumps Doyle's cola.
You better go.
Mr. Doyle Gibson, you is now bankrupt. And you owe me $5,000.
Finch smiles at Gavin, who frowns queasily. Now Doyle crosses the street to a couple of payphones. He finds the first one dead, then irritably feeds coins into the second. The two ad men exit the bar.
Hello?
It's me.
So you really bought a house?
Yeah.
Really? I mean, you actually own it?
Yeah. It's not a mansion on the hill, and it needs a lot of work, but it'd be yours. It'd be your house.
The men spot Doyle, one feigned swinging a golf club.
Oh, God.
What? The line's going dead. I can't hear you. I can't hear you.
Obviously, it would be better for the boys to be near their father.
What?
To have you nearby.
He's talking about our father.
Yeah, that was
what?
No, we didn't like it.
Listen,
what are you doing?
I'll
talking
call you
to
back.
Your daddy?
Doyle yanks out the receiver and punches the men with it.
You hit me. I'll hit you again. You like it? Huh?
Doyle hammers the first man again.
Mister, please. I got kids, man.
Yeah, well, so do I.
One fallen man grimaces. As the other staggers, touching his bloodied head, Doyle strides off at the law firm.
Doyle Gibson, this is Gavin Bannock calling. I have something that I want to tell you. First of all, I wanted to shake hands. All right, I wanted to start over. I gave you a chance, and you did this. Fine. I have just turned off your credit. You are now a spirit without a body. All right? And I can go on and on, pulling your life down around your ears. You can turn it off. You can go back to the way things were. Just give me my file back. Just today.
At the insurance office.
You know, just, I mean, thank you. Give me my file back. Get the credit turned back on, okay? Today. Thank you.
Sitting at his workstation, the insurance salesman stares off pensively. Meanwhile, Gavin does the same in his office at the law firm. Michelle enters.
Has he found yet?
Not yet.
She crosses to a fax machine. She picks up a page and reads it over.
Look at this.
What is it?
It's the life of Doyle Gibson, his whole life. We have his bank, his wife, kids, 2 boys, Danny and Steve, their birth dates, the school they go to, credit card balances, health records. His cholesterol is high, but his blood pressure is normal.
I'm 29 years old. Foundation has $107 million in it. My bosses are the trustees. So why didn't they come to court with me?
Michelle rests her chin on her palm.
Mina Dunn hates me. I assume there's a reason. Why am I the last guy in the room and why?
Sitting at his desk, she gives him a solemn stare.
What's in those files that I haven't seen?
On the couch, Gavin twiddles his thumbs. At the insurance office, Doyle curls his lower lip inward. He gazes down at the creased orange file folder in his hands. Sitting slumped back in his chair, he looks around thoughtfully.
Willard, can you get me a messenger?
What for?
Looking down, Doyle shifts his jaw.
I found something in the street. I want to get it back to the person it belongs to.
Is there a reward or something?
Yeah.
What is it?
Doing the right thing. Giving it back.
That's it?
That's it. That's the reward.
How about that?
Yeah, how about that?
He pulls a manila envelope bearing his company's letterhead out of a drawer, then puts on a phone headset.
Congratulations.
He dials on the keypad, then grabs a pen.
Yes.
Mr. Gibson, it's Ron Cabot at Queensborough Federal. There's something I need to talk to you about.
If you could give me a call today, or if it's convenient to stop by the bank, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Doyle Gibson, this is Gavin Banick calling. I have something that I want to tell you.
Meanwhile, Gavin hurries into the partner's office suite.
I lied to you this morning.
Delano looks up.
When I was on my way to the court, I stopped off at a diner to prepare. I took the files out. I looked them over. When I was leaving, I put them back. At least I could have sworn I put them back, but when I got to the court, the power of appointment was missing. And the court has given me until the end of the day to produce the original.
Call
the
diner?
Yes, I did. All the trash has been picked up, but we're tracking it, and I think we'll probably get it back. I just wanted you to know.
Why did you lie to us?
Gavin lowers his gaze sheepishly.
I'm really sorry.
You're sorry? Hey, who the hell gives a damn about the struggles of your character? If you have to go through every garbage bag in the city, you find that damn file or you're going to be the disaster of my life.
Look, wait a minute. We might get the file back, okay? But if we don't, we have to adopt a strong position. I need to see the rest of those files.
No, you're not going
to
see the files. What the hell do you want to see the files?
Why not? He's my client.
Hey, don't hey, what are you going to do? Give me a lecture on the law?
Why did you send me into the court by myself? I'm your son-in-law, for God's sake.
Hey, Stephen, calm down. Stephen.
What are you doing?
There's a way out of this.
Arnell rifles through a file cabinet.
A way out by letting him bring the files into court?
Calm down and stay with me here. Okay. Now, we had a signed document, right? Didn't we?
Yes.
Okay. Now, the power of appointment is 8 pages. The living will, which also has his signature, is 10. So we can reformat the power of appointment, and using the signature page from the living will, attach it to the new printout of the power of appointment.
And encode the header to match the document.
What do you think? Will it pass?
Yeah,
Steve,
this could work.
Yeah. I didn't ask you, all right? Gavin, will it pass?
We forge it?
You just forge it up.
Hey. You screwed this up. You lost the file. Nobody's asking you to get yourself out of it alone. We're willing to put ourselves on the line for you with this. Making a file is fraud. A new file is fraud. You understand that? Huh? And we're saying that we're gonna put our own careers on the line for you. That's what it means to be a partner.
No, we're not inventing. We're not inventing. We're just reproducing something that already exists. Look, Gavin, you take this into the court, and buddy, we can go on with our lives like this never happened.
Let me think about it.
The hell are you gonna think about your high school ethics class? What choice have you got? Want to go to jail?
Scowling, Delano steps close to his son-in-law.
Huh?
Gavin stares off for a moment, then faces him, blinking languidly.
No, I don't want to go to jail.
Later, Gavin steps lethargically across the office. A work of art depicting a circle dissected by a cross hangs on a wall around the corner from a break room. Gavin enters. Inside, he faces a wall of frosted glass cubes. Staring blankly, he nods his head. His eyes shift and his jaw clenches. He steps toward a tile wall, then turns, looking around. Behind him, 4 modern art photographs show a woman cleaning a house. Gavin closes the door. He retrieves a paper towel. His reflection appears in a cabinet's curved lid as he approaches a counter. Looking around cautiously, he holds the paper towel inside a toaster. It bursts into flames. A sprinkler head hangs from the ceiling above him. Gavin holds the burning paper up to it. As flames lick its metal spokes, water gushes out, knocking the paper towel from Gavin's hand. In the main work area, water rains down on Delano and Gavin's co-workers. Peering out the window in the break room's door, Gavin watches the firm's employees grab their things and clear out of the office. The office suite stands empty. Gavin exits the break room and resolutely crosses the main work area. Water glistens on the maple wood cubicles under the glow of mushroom-shaped lamps. He enters Delano's office. Passing trophies and framed photos on his father-in-law's desk, he approaches the file cabinet. He pauses, then opens the drawer. A water-streaked window blurs his features as he pulls out a large hanging folder and looks over its contents. Outside, employees stand with their backs to the street as a fire truck pulls up. In the lobby, firemen file up an escalator, crossing paths with Michelle and Gavin. He reads the file.
What did it say?
They pay themselves $1.5 million out of the trust. Out of the income of the trust.
Which is why they got rid of Mina Dunn and the rest of the board.
It's probably not even illegal.
No, it's probably just disgusting.
They head outside.
I did this.
No, you didn't.
I did this.
No,
I did.
You did not.
As Gavin looks back toward the office building, Michelle hunches her shoulders against the cold.
What do I do?
You give me the file and I'll take it back.
Take it back?
What? You didn't know who these people were? You married into it.
He shifts his gaze soberly, then walks away. Michelle rolls her eyes.
Since breakfast, I left the scene of an accident.
I just bankrupted a guy I don't even know.
I lied to my bosses.
Gavin and Michelle sit on a step.
Pulled a false alarm at work. Discovered I'm party to defrauding a charity. And now I'm sitting here, seriously contemplating forging a power of appointment.
You are listening to video description on the SAP channel. To return to regular program audio, turn off the SAP feature on your TV or VCR. Sitting with his hands folded between his knees, Gavin stares off distantly. Watching sympathetically, Michelle purses her lips and puts her arm around him. A passerby briefly draws Gavin's gaze. Frowning, the square-jawed attorney faces Michelle. His shoulders hunch and he tilts his knees inward. Michelle closes her eyes as he brings his lips to her cheek and pauses there for a moment. He nuzzles her cheekbone. A boy skids up on a bike.
Mister, hold out your hand.
What?
What do you got?
Hold out your hand. How many hands you got?
Two.
The kid slaps down scraps of paper in Gavin's hands, then leaves.
Thanks.
As he looks at some of the pieces, he frowns.
Oh, God.
It's the file.
They scatter in the wind.
No.
Michelle picks up one of the scraps.
Wait, no, look.
It's not the power of appointment.
It's a notice to appear in court. Yeah.
He picks one of the pieces of paper up from the bricks.
Look at this.
He shows Michelle some handwriting.
It's a phone number.
Now Doyle answers a payphone.
Who that you with?
Is that your business?
To your secretary?
No, she's a lawyer.
Not your wife?
No.
That leaves the scene of an accident. That cheats on his wife.
Can I have my file back, please?
It'll take me half an hour to get to my bank. Now, if my credit's not on by the time I get there, I destroy the file. That's the deal.
Yeah, okay, understood. Okay.
Doyle hangs up. Gavin puts his cell back to his ear.
Hello?
Hey.
Hey, that was pretty fast, man.
Yeah, it was great. Listen, man, I need to turn back on right away. As fast as you turn it off, I need to turn back on.
Amazing, wasn't it? 2 hours.
Yes, it was great. It was fine. It was terrific. I need to turn back on right now. 30 minutes, okay? Can you do that?
That's a little harder.
Please, man, don't tell me that. Please, do something for me here.
Hey,
you got to do something, man.
I'll do my best.
Finch hangs up, back with Gavin. He checks his phone's display.
Hey, babe, how's it going?
I need to see you.
Well, it's not a great time right now.
I need to see you right now.
Is something wrong?
No, I just need to see you. Meet me at Refugio's. I'll be there in 10 minutes.
All right, I'll be right there.
Okay.
Okay.
Don't be late.
Okay, fine.
Okay, honey, thanks.
All right.
He faces Michelle. She shrugs, and he does the same.
See you in a minute.
As they head off in different directions, she glances at him over her shoulder. Now Finch types furiously at his keyboard. Back outside, Gavin clenches his teeth as he walks briskly down a busy sidewalk. Now a view from a metal footbridge shows a taxi passing underneath. Meanwhile, Gavin glances at a church as he passes, then checks his watch. He breaks into a jog. Now the taxi passes underneath an overpass. In the backseat, Doyle presses his hands together and brings his fingers to his lips. Back outside, Gavin maneuvers around traffic as he crosses the street. Now the taxi comes to a stop and Doyle climbs out. Meanwhile, Finch squeezes the stress ball over his keyboard. Now Doyle crosses the bank to his loan officer.
Right. But you want to tell me my credit's off and I can't get approval for the loan?
Right.
Check it.
Well, right here. Oh. Well, that was strange. You're right. Your credit's back on.
So?
Staring at his monitor, Ron narrows his eyes.
Oh, this is so weird. No, there you go. That's what I thought. I knew I saw that. I knew it. I can't help you.
What do you mean you can't help me? You just saw.
There's still a problem.
No. It's all taken care of. It's all been solved. Look in the computer.
And it says you're bankrupt.
Straightening, Doyle puts his hands on his hips and looks down.
This is a mistake.
If it is a mistake, then clearing it up shouldn't take more than 3 months.
Pursing his lips, Doyle takes a seat.
Ron, I've been having a bit of a tussle today with someone. It doesn't matter who. But what does matter is that he got into my records. I don't know how, and that doesn't matter either.
It's
but
true,
you've
but
seen what he did. He's got some kind of computer voodoo. I don't know, but he's got it, doesn't he?
Ron unfolds his hands.
Someone sure caused you some trouble.
Doyle's hopeful expression sours. He presses his lips together desperately.
I need this loan, Ron. I need it for my life. Now, nothing has changed between yesterday and today. I'm still the same guy. I wasn't bankrupt yesterday, and I'm not bankrupt today!
Another loan officer looks over from her desk.
I'm sorry, Mr. Gibson. The computer says you are.
Fuming, Doyle rips the monitor from its cables. Ron tenses. Doyle brings the monitor to the windows and hurls it against a beam. Customers in line gape as he stomps on it.
Now it's up!
He marches past a security guard and exits. Now in a fancy restaurant, Gavin ascends a short flight of stairs. Meanwhile, Doyle heads toward a subway station. Back in the restaurant, Gavin kisses a young brunette woman sitting alone at a table.
You okay?
As he sits, she nods. He pours himself some sparkling water.
What's wrong?
Now Doyle enters a hardware store. Back in the restaurant, Cynthia smiles at Gavin.
Did you know that my father had a mistress for 20 years?
She lifts her eyebrows.
No.
Don't lie.
As she grins, Gavin avoids her gaze.
I didn't know it was 20 years.
Mm-hmm. My mother knew about it.
He stares down toward the table.
Why didn't she leave him?
Because she loved him so much. And she decided it'd be hypocritical to leave a man for cheating at home when the expense of life she enjoyed so much was paid for by a man whose job was based on finding ways to cheat.
Is that your opinion of the law?
What do you think the law is, Gav? At this level of the game. At my father's level of the game, at your level of the game. It is a big, vicious rumble, Gavin.
At the hardware store, Doyle roams the aisles.
The people who founded this law firm and the people who sustain it understand the way the world works. If you want to continue to live the way we've been living,
you have to steal.
Back at the restaurant, Gavin faces his wife squarely.
I could have married an honest man.
At the hardware store, Doyle checks out a metal pole.
I could have lived with a professor of Middle English, for example. if he was a moral man and had tenure at Princeton. But I didn't. I married a Wall Street lawyer, which means I married someone who lives in a world where when a man comes to the edge of things, he has to commit to staying there and living there. Can you live there, Gavin? Can you live there with me?
As Cynthia flashes a crooked smile, Gavin glowers. She lowers her gaze.
You're not going to do anything stupid like leaving me. You've had fantasies, I'm sure, so have I, but we're married.
Her light blue eyes watch her husband closely.
I knew about Michelle. I knew when it was happening, and I knew when it was finished.
Gavin's mouth trembles and his eyes glisten with tears.
And I know you love me.
She wears a pleasant smile.
You do love me, and I love you too.
Her expression hardens.
I'm your wife, and I want to stand beside you.
As Gavin narrows his moist eyes, his wife hangs her head.
Just let me help you, Gavin. Let me help you with this.
Cynthia's bright blue eyes fix sympathetically on her husband.
What do you want me to do?
Gavin's eyes pool with tears.
Take the signature page from the living will and attach it to the newly formatted copy of the power of appointment. Bring it to the courthouse and then meet me for dinner tonight. We're going out with Karen and Carl.
Gavin gives a bemused half smile.
Karen and Carl. I forgot about Karen and Carl.
And I remembered. We're a team, Gav. We're partners.
As the attorney watches her, Cynthia lowers her gaze, then gets to her feet. A pained frown registers on her face. She leans over, cradling his cheek, and kisses his forehead. Receiving the kiss, Gavin closes his eyes and his mouth relaxes open. She tenderly plants a second kiss on his brow. As she walks away, Gavin opens his eyes and watches Cynthia leave the dining room.
Arugula salad?
Hello?
Deal's a deal.
The credit's back on?
Yeah, use my MasterCard.
Sir, just now. Cell phone.
Wow, that was fast.
Sir.
Okay, one second.
Turn my credit back on, now I owe you something.
Thank God you did not throw that away this morning.
So how do you want to do this?
Okay, one second. You want to come to my office?
No.
Why not?
You got your car?
I can get it. It's at the office, yeah.
Okay, so how about the courthouse? You do have to turn this thing in, don't you?
Right.
See, I'm thinking about you.
Okay, listen, Doyle,
Look, please. You aren't going to get all soft on me, are you?
I just want you to know that I'm sorry, you know, and I just, I'm just glad this thing is over.
On a sidewalk, Doyle hangs up a payphone, clutching a gray shopping bag. Now Gavin runs down a sidewalk and into a parking garage. In the backseat of a taxi, Doyle passes a half dozen large bolts from one hand to the other. Doyle stares out the window toward the parking garage. As Gavin's silver Mercedes edges out, the taxi pulls into traffic behind it.
Don't get too close.
Doyle's cab follows the lawyer onto the freeway. Gavin uses his cell phone.
Hello?
Hey, my hero, my champion. It's all over. He called me. He's giving me back the file.
Really?
What do you mean?
Because there's one thing I couldn't do.
What couldn't you do?
The cab pulls alongside Gavin and Doyle waves at him.
Hey.
This damn bankruptcy is a life of its own.
Doyle shows a lug nut, then spins a lug wrench.
What could you do?
I couldn't undo the bankruptcy. Sorry.
Gavin gazes quizzically at Doyle, his mouth hanging slightly agape. As the cab pulls away, Gavin lowers his phone. His front left tire starts to wobble. As the Mercedes shakes, Gavin grips the steering wheel and clenches his teeth. The tire rolls away. Sparks fly as the bare axle scrapes the pavement. Just ahead, Doyle watches the Mercedes swerve from lane to lane through the taxi's back window. As Gavin tries to pull toward an exit, the Mercedes goes into a spin. As the Mercedes slams against the freeway's concrete divider, an airbag inflates in Gavin's face. In the cab, Doyle turns away from the window and covers his mouth. As the cab continues on, Doyle clutches the lug wrench to his chest and stares off soberly. On the freeway shoulder, Gavin's door opens. His feet slowly rest on the pavement, and he stands. A gash crosses one cheek, and another cut mars the bridge of his nose. Elsewhere on the freeway, the taxi travels along the center lane. Gavin takes a few uncertain steps from his car. As he looks around, vehicles whiz past him. Facing the wrecked Mercedes, he puts a hand to his head. Elsewhere on the freeway, our shaky view speeds low over the pavement. Meanwhile, Gavin walks along the painted area of an exit median. He comes across Doyle's abandoned Toyota, which sits with a flat tire and crumpled hood. Shifting on his feet, Gavin gazes wearily at Doyle's car. He leans back against it and gazes off, slack-jawed. Now in the city, Doyle uses a payphone.
Are you drunk?
No.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure.
Now Doyle walks down a sidewalk. Hands in his pockets, he passes an auto body shop and stops at the two-story brick home. Valerie sits on its concrete steps.
Hey.
Hey.
They face each other, then Doyle looks up at the building.
It's nice.
Keeping his gaze averted, Doyle nods. Doyle meets his wife's gaze. She stands.
Show me the house.
Now, outside the cathedral, Gavin walks slowly along the sidewalk. At its front steps, he stops and stares blankly toward one of the three recessed portals in the church's Gothic architecture.
On which was hung the Savior of the world.
Gavin enters the church.
This is the wood of the cross.
Carrying a crucifix, a priest wearing red vestments leads a procession of altar boys down the aisle. Pacing behind the filled pews, Gavin eyes the procession. On the altar, black cloths cover the heads of three statues, including one of Jesus on the cross. Gavin slumps down in an open confessional and stares off. Now, in the brick house, Valerie surveys one of the bare rooms.
You know why I took the job in Oregon?
Doyle nods. He walks toward a window and sits on a radiator.
To get as far away from me as possible.
Valerie moistens her pressed lips and sways slightly.
I looked at a lot of cities, and Portland has thousands of nice, dull-bearded guys. And I thought, you know, guys like this, just guys. I could find one. A better version of you, Doyle. A version of you, but a better version of you. What I always...
Her lip trembles.
Wanted you to be, and what you were for a little when I met you.
Doyle gazes downward. Now in the church, the confessional screen slides open.
In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
No, I don't want a confession. All the seats are full out there, so I came in here and was listening to the song.
Oh, there's some seats up front. I'll show you.
No, I don't want that. Thank you.
The priest sits back down and stares at Gavin.
Are you Catholic?
Now in the house, Doyle leads his wife into another room.
Could have been. I don't know what's gonna happen, but I don't blame you for wanting to leave. Oregon. Boys. It'll be good for them.
I know how hard it must be for you to say that.
Doyle shuts his eyes and nods.
sorry I was late today.
Valerie lowers her gaze.
We should have waited.
In the confessional.
I came here for some meaning. I want you to give the world meaning to me.
Why does the world need meaning?
Why does the... What? Because the world is a steward. Because the world's a garbage dump. Because my father-in-law got me to screw a good man, a decent man, out of his money. And my wife cheers me on. Because I got into a fender bender with this guy on the FDR, and I had a little fight with him, and I tried to do everything I could to settle it, but this guy just won't let it go.
Why? Why wouldn't he let it go?
I don't know why! Sometimes God likes to put two guys in a paper bag and just let them rip.
Gavin bolts out of the confessional. In the house, Valerie puts her arms around Doyle. He rests his face against her shoulder.
Thank you.
They sway gently in each other's arms.
Thank you for letting us go.
Valerie eases her arms from around Doyle's shoulders, gently kisses his lips, and steps away. Doyle watches her round the room's doorway and leave. Now Gavin rushes across the street and enters a brick building. Words at the top of its two-story portico read, Public School 401. Inside, he faces a primly dressed woman.
Are you saying he's a threat to his children?
Yes, he's told friends that if his ex-wife got custody, he would kidnap his sons and take them out of this country.
And she got custody?
We're in court this morning. Now, I don't know for a fact that he's coming here, but
Doyle
he does.
Gibson? Really?
Really? What does that mean?
He comes to every school play that they're in, all the teacher conferences.
So a guy comes to a school play, you trust him? Doyle Gibson is a man of no honor at all. A low man. But that's okay, because nobody else has any honor either. But that's what makes life so hard for people, is that we're taught this fairy tale, that the good end well and the bad end poorly. Do you believe that?
I'd like to.
He's coming here. Be ready for him.
Now Doyle glances out of a cab's backseat window. It reflects passing apartment buildings. The orange folder lies on his lap.
Is he in?
Gavin stands at a payphone.
Hello, is he there? Well, I just need to leave a message for him. I'm calling from his children's school. Yeah, I'm afraid there's been an accident.
In the cab, Doyle checks a number on his pager. The cab turns around. As the taxi makes a risky U-turn in the middle of traffic, the cross on the driver's rosary bounces below the rearview mirror. The cab pulls up to the public school, and Doyle hurriedly gets out and runs up the front steps to the door. Inside, Doyle races upstairs and into an office with several desks and file cabinets. He faces a matronly woman at the first desk.
Sons.
Who are your sons?
Danny and Stephen Gibson. I received a call that said they were hurt. Danny and Stephen Gibson?
I haven't heard anything.
I want to see my sons!
Mr. Gibson.
Miss Miller, how are the boys?
Mr. Gibson, I think you should leave before we call the police.
Doyle bridles.
Mr. Gibson, don't make me call the police.
So, they're fine?
Yes, your boys are fine.
And all this is just a mistake.
Yes.
A security guard and a room of office workers stare at Doyle.
I'm sorry.
Doyle turns and leaves the office. As he heads down the hall, Miss Miller and the security guard follow him. Doyle pushes through swinging doors and glances into a classroom.
Danny! Stevie!
Come, boys!
Daniel Gibson! Stevie Gibson! Can you hear me?
In a classroom, Danny looks up.
Can you hear me?
Call the mother.
Danny runs for the door.
Danny, come back.
Stevie!
Police grab Doyle, holding him back from his kids. At the other end of the hall, his boys run toward their father. Teachers hold them back.
Danny!
The police wrestle Doyle to the floor and handcuff him. As the police pull Doyle to his feet and usher him away, two teachers restrain Danny and Stephen and drag them back into their classrooms. Outside, they put Doyle in a police car.
See that? Try to make peace with you.
Across the street, Gavin watches from behind the payphone. The police drive off with Doyle.
You know what I can do to you? Try to kill me? Ha! You know who I am? You know who I am? You see what I can do to you? What's up now?
Turning toward the school, Gavin spots Miss Miller talking to Valerie on the sidewalk. The boys hug their mother, pressing their faces against her coat. Gavin briefly tenses his jaw, and his gaze softens. He watches Valerie clutching Danny and Steven's hands as she leads them away from school. Stooping low, she talks to the boys. As Steven fights back tears, Valerie kisses his cheek.
Empty your pocket, sir.
At a police station, Doyle faces a booking officer's desk. He digs through his pockets. The officer jots notes.
Shane. Wallet. Pager.
Doyle removes the power of appointment file from his overcoat.
Fire.
He puts it down. Now Gavin runs into the bank, clutching a slip of paper. He shows it to a guard.
Hey, how you doing? Look for Ron Cap.
How's your money, sir?
How's your money?
At the station, the officer puts the file in an envelope at the bank.
Mr. Cap, I'm Doyle Gibson's attorney.
I really don't want to talk about him. Since we're closing now, I don't have to.
Okay, I understand that.
At the police station, Doyle counts his money.
$77. I'm asking you to try to help me help Doyle here.
He needs it.
You gotta understand, he's had about the worst day of his life. He had this credit problem that was not his fault. It was caused by somebody...
Someone who hacked their way into his records, I know.
How can we get this whole thing straightened out? What can I do?
Nothing.
Ron faces his computer screen. Gavin shifts his weight nervously and wipes his brow.
Okay. Mr. Cabot.
Gavin sits opposite him.
Ron, come on. What do I do? Just cosign? What's the thing? What's the deal? Can you please tell me what I got to do? I'm asking you what I have to do to make this thing work.
Through cell bars, Doyle faces Valerie.
You know this has nothing to do with you. It's this guy. He's been at me all day.
So somebody you've been fighting with?
Yes.
You had a fight with somebody who hit your car, and then you spent the day in some kind of battle with him, and then he went to the school to hurt you as hard as he could.
You believe me?
Yes.
Thank God. Thank God. Did this guy, this lawyer, Gavin Bannock...
Doyle, stop. Stop, Doyle. I don't care. See, whatever this little drama you've gotten yourself into is, guess what? It's just the kind of thing that always happens to you. And it never happens to me unless I am in your field of gravity. You went crazy like you always go crazy, like you always will go crazy, drunk or sober. It doesn't matter, Doyle, because that's you. A person can be loving. And a person can be crazy all at once. Fine, great, that's life. But this is not just my life now. Or yours. It is the life of two children, and I have to protect those two children. Is that a misunderstanding? Is it? Is it, Doyle? I mean, is that this guy's fault?
At least let me say goodbye to them.
No! Taking those boys away, and you will never see them again. You will never find us. Do not try to come after us. Do you hear me? It is over!
Valerie leaves. Doyle sinks back onto a bench, letting go of the bars. Now at the law firm, a few employees and maintenance men clean up their damp workspaces under the dim glow of desk lamps.
On Wall Street, the Dow down at the close, down by 4 1/3 points. The Nasdaq higher by around 3.5 points. Encourage your nearest authorized dealer. Save up to $100 during Frederick's preseason rebate sale.
Gavin stands in the hall watching them blankly. His loosened tie hangs from his unbuttoned shirt collar. Hands in his pockets, he strolls past empty cubicles. At a small waiting area, he stops and gazes at Tyler, the young curly-haired job applicant. Tyler looks up nervously. Gavin glances down the hall.
Where's Ellen?
She went home.
Why are you still here?
You told me to wait.
Gavin cocks his head, and one corner of his mouth lifts in a slight grin.
Well, I'm on it.
Tyler follows Gavin into his glass-walled office.
Have a seat.
Tyler complies, glancing at a piece of artwork covering an entire wall. The bright panoramic beach scene shows people relaxing on the sand.
So why do you want to be a lawyer?
I believe in the law. I believe in order and justice. I believe that people are by nature good. I believe that historical forces push us into conflict, and without the law as a buffer between people, we would have a world of vendetta, world of violence, world of chaos.
Gavin chuckles.
The law keeps us civilized. I don't think it's funny.
That's why I'm gonna give you this job.
Tyler's eyes shift nervously.
I'm giving you the job because I want to hear what you have to say about the law after you've worked here for 5 years, or 3 years, or a month, a week, a day, an hour.
Tyler's lips part.
I'm hired. Don't I have to see a committee or something?
At the jail, an officer opens Doyle's cell door.
You made bail.
Who?
Bren.
Doyle stands. Now in Gavin's office, Michelle reads a letter.
The Honorable Judge Francis Abarbanel, I have been unable to recover the power of appointment signed by Simon Dunn. But even if I have been able to produce the power of appointment, I want the court to know that the document was a fraud. I induced Mr. Dunn to sign a document when his mental status was diminished and he was incapable of making an informed decision.
Dropping her jaw, Michelle looks up, then faces Gavin.
They set you up. They made hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they're going to make more.
And I made partner, and a bonus they could have paid for 200 pianos.
You don't say anything about them. You're taking everything on your shoulder in this letter. Why? I mean, you could send them to jail.
They got to write their own letters.
Michelle gazes blankly at Gavin, then glances down at the letter on his desktop. Gavin stands up and walks up to her with slow steps. Michelle's gaze remains lowered. As Gavin touches her hair, she quickly jerks her head away. Her chin trembles slightly, then she tightens her lips. Gavin shakes his head.
Let me go.
Now outside the police station, Doyle's sponsor stands on the sidewalk. A policeman opens the station door and Doyle steps out. The sponsor turns and faces him. Doyle stuffs the orange folder into his coat pocket, then buttons up on his way down the steps.
Hey.
Should have left me inside.
You're too important to me.
He takes Doyle's arm.
Come on, let's go to a meeting.
No, I went to one yesterday.
Doyle breaks away from his sponsor.
Well, that was yesterday.
Yeah, one day at a time, right?
Yeah, one day at a time and do the next right thing. Let's go, there's a meeting at 6.
God grant me the strength to accept the things I cannot change.
Doyle lowers his gaze and turns around to look at his stern-faced sponsor. At the firm, Delano lowers a copy of Gavin's letter typed on the firm's letterhead.
It's an admirable gesture, but it's unnecessary. It's unnecessary because you've already filed the power of appointment with the court. A bonded courier delivered it to the judge just before 5 o'clock, and our bailiff signed for it. Your note of apology was contrite, but it was absolutely professional. Everything's taken care of.
You filed a forgery.
I filed what I had to file. What happened? You just disappeared. Time was up. Come on, you scared the hell out of us.
I didn't know what to do.
Gavin looks severely at Delano, who smiles. Meanwhile, Doyle faces his sponsor.
So you finally hit rock bottom.
Doyle looks away, nodding.
Today you almost killed the guy. Tomorrow you might go all the way. Keep doing the next wrong thing. You could start a religion, convince the sober to drink. Don't tell them to keep each other alive with hope. What you saw today, that everything decent is held together by a covenant, an agreement not to go ballistic. You broke the contract.
I didn't have a drink.
Well, wow. Thank you for sharing. You didn't have a drink today. What an inspiration.
That's the point, isn't it?
Doyle's sponsor paces away. As Doyle shifts, wearing a sour expression, the sponsor eyes him.
You know, booze isn't really your drug of choice anyway. You're addicted to chaos. For some of us, it's coke. For some of us, it's bourbon. But you got hooked on disaster.
Under the man's scowl, Doyle works his jaw. A breath of vapor escapes his stiffened nostrils. The sponsor shrugs and checks his watch. He walks away, leaving Doyle alone in front of the station.
Here's what you should do. You get up Monday morning.
At the firm.
You get yourself on a plane to Texas. Take that letter with you. When you get to Texas, you get on the defense team of somebody on death row. And then put all your energy into saving a man from execution. And then come on back here in a few months. You still want to confess? Go ahead.
Gavin stares, glassy-eyed.
Come on. How the hell do you think Simon Dunn got his money? Huh? You think those factories in Malaysia have daycare centers in them? You want to check the pollution levels of his chemical plants in Mexico or look at the tax benefits he got from this foundation? This is all a tightrope. You've got to learn to balance.
How can you live like that?
I can live with myself because at the end of the day, I think I do more good than harm.
Delano unfolds his arms and spreads them.
What other standard have I got to judge by?
Delano sips a highball. Across the office alone. Water beads on the plate glass partitions enclosing his office. He opens the door and strides in. He sits heavily at a bare work table. On the back of Gavin's head, his shiny dark hair gleams in the dim light. We draw closer and closer to the surface of hair, then withdraw. The power of appointment folder lies on the tabletop. Gavin's hands, which cover his face, part before him, revealing the creased orange file.
I have to thank you.
Gavin whips around, finding Doyle on the couch under the beach painting. Gavin fingers the file.
For the house.
Doyle shakes his head.
I understand what you were trying to do, but my wife's moving. She's taking the boys. And the house is a little bit too much for me right now.
I'm sorry.
No. I was a horribly unstable father. Valerie says I'll never see him again. But you know what? I will. Well, I'll see him in a year, two, maybe three. I'll go to Portland, I'll call her. And I'll find a way to be their father again.
Doyle leans back.
How about you? Well, I have the file, but I don't need it anymore. It's been taken care of.
Gavin shakes his head. He pats the orange file, then drums his fingers on it. Gavin gets to his feet, faces Doyle, and leans back against the work table.
I'm going to dinner. My wife. Her parents. And, this weekend I'm going to go look at a boat.
Doyle creases his lips frankly and nods.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Monday I'm going to come back in here and go to work. And then magically this whole incredible day just somehow becomes a memory.
He eyes the panoramic coastal painting.
It's like you go to the beach, you get out of the water, it's a little cold. I'm not sure if you want to go in.
pretty girl standing next to you. She doesn't want to go in either. She sees you. And you know, if you just asked her her name, you would leave with her. Forget your life. Whoever you came with. Leave the beach with her. And after that day, you remember her. Not every day, every week. She comes back to you. It's the memory of another life you could have had. Today's that girl.
His eyes pooled with tears, Gavin steps around the work table. Doyle gets to his feet, eyeballs Gavin, and plods across the office. As Gavin puts on his suit coat, holding the power of appointment, Doyle stands at a window overlooking the city.
I'm sorry. I don't know what I did.
The two men make eye contact. Doyle nods.
Me too. He brought the file back.
Doyle briefly shuts his eyes, giving Gavin a resigned smile. He then regards the younger man seriously. Now, in the night air, Gavin rides in a taxi, clutching the orange folder. Later, in a restaurant, he sits with Cynthia and Mr. and Mrs. Delano.
And when you're done, there's a lovely little place on the hill where you can get a...
cappuccino.
Yes, that's right. They're lovely cappuccinos. And it's clean and it's cool. And they have these prints on the wall. They're really quite lovely. I don't know who they're by.
Delano and Gavin lock gazes.
Oh, they're by that artist.
Chagall.
Right. They're Chagall's. There are three of them. They're early Chagall's. I think he painted them when he was visiting there.
Gavin slaps down the orange folder. As Cynthia glances between her husband and father, her mother blinks wide-eyed.
Am I missing something this evening?
What is this?
This, my dear, this is Simon Dunn's power of appointment. Got it back.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. This is it. It's right here.
Please.
This is behind us, isn't it?
I was thinking
about put this behind us.
What you said. I was thinking about what you said to me about the end of the day, about doing more good than harm. That is what you said, isn't it? Can you imagine how unpleasant it would be if the judge got a hold of this file?
That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen, Gavin.
I think I might order the snapper.
Servers cross the busy, posh restaurant.
I'm going to hold on to this file. I'm going to keep it in a very safe place. But I'm not going to Texas. I'm going to come back into work on Monday. And I'm going to start doing that pro bono work that you recommended that I do. But I'm going to do it from our office. First thing we're going to do is help a man buy a house.
Gavin, can we please
and
not do
I think
this?
I would like to be the one to call Mita Dunn. I'm going to tell her that you and Walter are going to give back the $3 million you stole from her grandfather's foundation.
Delano swallows hard and his eyes drift downward. As Mrs. Delano stares at him breathlessly, Cynthia lifts her gaze. Gavin meets it with his own.
You were right. I can do this. I found the edge. Can you live there with me?
Cynthia takes in a shallow breath.
Can you?
Her lower lip trembles and she lowers her gaze. Delano glares at the younger attorney.
You know, I haven't eaten all day and I'm starving.
He reads the menu.
So what are we going to eat?
Now, in the same suit and tie, Gavin hurries up flights of stairs in a tidy apartment building. Arriving at an upper floor, he stops on a hallway's black and white checkered tile and approaches a far door. Valerie opens up.
Mrs. Gibson.
Yes?
My name is Gavin Bannock.
What do you want?
5 minutes, ma'am. I owe your husband 20. I'm only asking for five with you.
Later. On a city street, Doyle exits a narrow doorway between a bakery and a rib joint. as he looks skyward, passing traffic blocks our view of him. When our clear view returns, Doyle glances left and right, then takes a few steps. He halts, and a misty breath escapes his lips. Doyle cocks his head curiously. His gaze catches on something near us across the street from him. As more cars and people pass, he steps closer to the curb. Doyle stands motionless, facing in our direction. A truck passes, cutting off our view of the thoughtful man. It cruises by, revealing Valerie with the boys. All three stand motionless, facing Doyle under a mix of falling rain and snow. Valerie wears a faint, serene smile. A school bus passes between the humbled father and his family. When another truck passes, Valerie's expression is warmer. With her eyes on Doyle, she holds Stephen's hand and rubs the front of Danny's jacket. Doyle stares at the sight before him, exhaling a frosty breath into the air. Fade to black.